Voices, Washington.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We're talking about a huge project planned for D.C., the burying of electricity lines by PEPCO, and that it's going to be happening, but not before a series of community hearings are held, and they are coming up. And you should be at those hearings if you are at all concerned about how this process is going to move forward, what impact this may have on your community, on your business, and the like. My guests are Betty Ann Kane, chair of the D.C. Public Service Commission, and Travis Smith, trial supervisor with the D.C. Office of the People's Counsel. Give us a call if you have a question or comment at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Before the break, we were talking about which lines will go underground and which will remain where they are. And yet, as I said before, this is a very, very large project. So where might we see, if all goes as planned after these hearings, when would we expect this to begin and where might we see the first work?
Well, actually, the new legislation gives the commission a fairly short timeline for making the decisions. And that's why we're having the hearings actually this week and next week. We'll take comments from the public up through September 12th. And I suspect by October or so, we will have made a decision. We have the application from, it's a joint application from PEPCO and DDOT for 2 years. We're going to do it 2 years at a time. So it's not all going to be approved at once. Then the new application has got actually, six feeders, six of those primary feeders, that we're going to be looking at for the first 2 years. And then every 2 years, they're going to be applying more. It's complicated to explain, but it's the way we had to do the financing to kind of spread it out. It's $1 billion. It may take 10, 12 years altogether for this first part. But once those are approved, assuming nobody takes us to court again, which we hope that they won't, one of them is pretty much ready to go. I think there's one and Oregon Avenue and one, that two of them were already approved in the first group, and they've reappeared in the next group. That's in Fort Davis, Marshall Heights area in Ward 7. The other one is in the Tacoma, Manna Park, Piney Branch, Blair Road area in Ward 4. And then, as I said, the Oregon Avenue, Military Road Chase area, Chevy Chase area in Ward 4. Brooklyn, Michigan Avenue, South Dakota, up around Catholic University, over to 24th Street. It's actually east of Catholic in Ward 5. In Southwest, in Ward 8, in the Martin Luther King South Capitol Blue Plains area. And then in Ward 3, west of Wisconsin Avenue, over in the Brandywine, 49th Street, 45th Street area. So those are the six that PEPCO and DDOT working together have proposed for the first, we call the first two-year plan. And those are the ones that we're having, the four new ones, the one we didn't have hearings on already, we're having hearings on in those neighborhoods. And hopefully once that's approved, we can see them start to get going. So they've done some design work on some of them already.
Harold, if I just... excuse me, may add, I believe your initial question, you also inquired as to when we could expect construction to start.
Right.
At this juncture, we cannot say. Under the revised law, excuse me, PEPCO and DDOT, they're required to, within 90 days of the commission issuing an order on their application, they're required to file with the commission what's called a 90-day supplement, which in there, that's where they list the start, estimated start and end dates for each project. So for each of the six power lines that Chairman Kane just referenced, in which PEPCO and DDOT are proposing to underground, in their 90-day supplement, which again will come 90 days after the commission issues its order, they're going to then lay out again where the work is going to take place and the estimated start and end dates. And so that'll be the first time when we'll know with some degree of certitude when they'll actually start to break ground.
Does anybody have any idea what this work will look like? If I'm standing on my front porch and it's happening in my community, what would I see?
Well, one of the things that we required, and we will continue, I am sure, in this go-round is a community advisory group in each neighborhood. PEPCO and DDOT will be going in. They'll be meeting with the neighbors, doing the work. DDOT will do the work first, and what they'll do is they'll open up the street so that the conduit, the concrete conduit, can go in there. And that will probably look not very different than when they open it up for water or sewer or anything else. I'm not an engineer, but that's kind of the idea. And then once that conduit is in there, then PEPCO will come, take the wires off the primary feeder, take that down, put new wires, and pull them through that conduit, and then close it up.
How long might something like that take in one particular instance?
Well, it really depends. I mean, these vary. I'm looking at the one, for example, in Ward 7, which is the Benning Ridge, Fort DuPont, Marshall Heights area. It is almost 4 miles, and it's almost all underground. All I can say is it will depend. But the idea is to get this going. I'd suspect most of it will be in the spring because you don't do much of this kind of construction in the winter. Some of them are much longer. There's one that's almost 9 miles in the original plan. Some of them are shorter. But there is a requirement that the commission and have been insisted on that there be work with the community as each of these projects is being instituted and planned and carried out, along with contacts, information for the community, things like if the bus stop gets affected, you know, all of that kind of work we're going to insist, and I'm sure People's Council will too. And I'm sure that PEPCO and DDOT want that to happen. They don't want it to be a hassle and a disruption any more than necessary.
Well, and to that point, because a lot of people are very familiar with what happened on 8th Street with the trolley. And how unpleasant it was for businesses that in some cases are no longer businesses there. Yeah. And it's still debatable as to whether or not the trolley is worth it, but that's another show. But with that said, what kind of precautions or considerations are taken for how this will affect, let's start at the top, businesses? It's one thing for you to roll over my rose bushes, you know. I wouldn't be happy about that, but I can buy more rose bushes, even though they may be expensive, but not as expensive as the loss of business over the course of a four-mile or nine-mile project in my community.
Right. I will say, looking at the maps, most of it is in residential areas. There are some of the small commercial areas, but again, that is why we will be insisting, and I'm sure People's Council will, with that there be these contact people, that there be people on site, that there be consultation with the community as each part of it. This is not the kind, it's not like metro construction, and which went on. This is not that disruptive to open up the street and put the put the conduit. And one of the reasons that I think Mayor Gray, and I think it was a great idea he had, and certainly Mayor Bowser, has supported this very strongly, is that this be coordinated with DDOT. And one of the reasons, one of the criteria for picking which particular feeders were going to be done at which time was supposed to be maybe DDOT was already going to be doing some work there, or Washington Gas was going to be doing some work there, so it could be coordinated and it would be less disruptive. And that's the kinds of questions we're going to be asking when we have the hearings and the community can ask as to how is this going to be handled. So we all want the benefit of the better resistance to storm outages, but we also want to be sure that it's done in a way that's as least disruptive as possible.
And if I just may add, Harold, you're hitting a key nail on the head. So earlier you asked what the office's role is going to be with respect to this initiative. The office's role is really going to be twofold. One, a huge part of it is outreach and education. We've been doing outreach and education when it comes to DC Plug going all the way back to when the first version of the law was passed, and we'll continue doing that. And in so doing, what we do is apprise people of, again, what's being proposed, what it's going to cost, where it's going to take place, and just the different things they need to know, such as the hypothetical you provided a little earlier as far as someone's rose bush being run over or a business owner suffering some sort of loss, that's construction-related loss. Those are very real concerns for a lot of people. And so what we're doing is working closely with PEPCO to make sure that they do have what's called a communications plan, which they actually have filed with their application, a communications plan in place that's comprehensive and that addresses such issues so that folks do know who to talk to, what to expect, what the process is, as opposed to dealing with a bunch of frustration in that regard on top of the annoyance of the initial problem.
Now, and so I ask again, for example, as we have often seen, when construction workers, utility workers come through communities, whether it's, you know, in the district or otherwise, sometimes they have to dig and sometimes they do have to disrupt property. And when they leave, the problem is fixed, but they're not, the aesthetics are not the same. Are there any kinds of plans to address those issues if something like that happens?
We have general rules at the commission. Anytime a utility does work on private property, it's got to be restored. But I will again say, as Travis said, these are what we call the primary feeders, mm-hmm. And that's going to be in the street. Almost all of this, I think, is going to be in public property. It's going to be in the street. It's not the wire that goes, you know, from the pole to your house. That's not going to be affected. That's not going to be changed. It's still going to be on a pole going to your house.
Mm-hmm.
These are what I call the main lines, if you will, and they will go down, whether they go down the middle of the street or the side of the street, close to the curb. That's where, now that's still going to be disruptive. You're parking, you've got businesses, et cetera. But I don't anticipate, from what we saw in the last go-round and proposal, that there's going to be much actual construction on private property, maybe some places where a main line goes over private property, but most of it's in the public rights of way. And that, again, is why DDOT, and it's DDOT, the District Department of Transportation, that's going to be doing that work of opening the streets, putting the conduit in, et cetera.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about the burying of power lines here in the District of Columbia and the impact that it may have on you, your community, and the district as a whole, and specifically why. There are hearings that are coming up over the next week or so. And if you want information about those hearings, you can find it on the Public Service Commission's website, dcpsc.org. That's dcpsc.org. And as promised, that information will be on our website, whur.com. I need to take a break. When we come back, more questions about this, particularly what specifically will be happening in these community hearings, what you can expect to hear, to learn. So stay with us. Lines are still open if you have a question. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We're talking about a huge project planned for D.C., the burying of miles of electricity lines here in the district. It is a long-term project to make sure that our electricity here in the district is not susceptible to Mother Nature, storms and ice storms and high winds and the like. Obviously, it's been a big problem here. If you live in the district, you know you may have lost power. And so this should help address that. But it's going to take a while, and it's not going to be cheap. I remember former Mayor Gray mentioning that $1 billion figure. That's a head-snapping figure. And without getting too much into the weeds, Ms. Kane, because I know you were talking about the the complexities of paying for this. But a lot of people, when they hear $1 billion and they hear government and they hear PEPCO, the thing that they're most concerned about is whether or not there's a trickle down effect impacting how much they pay for their electricity. Is that part of it?
It is. It is very much a part of it, and it was one of the things that was a feature of the first bill and the new legislation. Basically, there'll be two surcharges that will be put onto everyone's bill. For a residential customer, for this first go-round, remember, it's spread out over a good number of years, and part of it will be pay-as-you-go, so there'll be no borrowing, there'll be no interest. The estimate in the application that's been filed is that for the average residential customer, it'll be somewhere around $1.15, $1.10 a month. For business customers, average probably depends on how, and that'll depend on how much electricity they use. Very small businesses, maybe 20 or 30 a month. And then
20 or 30 cents or dollars?
No, dollars.
Okay. Wow.
Well, that depends on customers. That's probably a fairly large business that's at that level. But for the average residential customer who's using an average amount of electricity, it'll be about $1.15 a month.
For how long?
At the levels that has been filed. Now, the commission will be looking at that. We'll be looking at the numbers. We'll be making a decision on that. It won't go into effect. None of it will go into effect automatically. We have to look at the money and the cost and see. And remember, this is everyone in the city will be paying for this. It's spread out over all the customers, not just being burdened on the customers in those particular neighborhoods where the construction's being done. That's the way most of, you know, this, everybody benefits. It may just be Marshall Heights and Fort Davis, et cetera, that are getting the benefit, you know, in this first time. But everybody benefits when the system works well for everyone.
No, that's absolutely right, Chairman Kane. If I just may add, cost is a huge issue for our office. That's, again, in addition to educating and informing, making sure that ratepayers are receiving quality service at a reasonable cost. The People's Council herself, she actually was on the task force and the various committees and whatnot that ultimately led to DC Plug, and she championed indefatigably, quite frankly, for low cost, to the point where one of the surcharge or one of the finance mechanisms that actually was now invalidated with the new legislation, the bonds, it was actually introduced out of concern that she expressed to not end up with a surcharge that was somewhere in the neighborhood of $10, $15, $20 a month. And so now, even though the bonds are no longer going to be used to finance DDOT's construction costs, the PAYGO model that Chairman Kane just mentioned a moment ago, it is still structured in such a way so as to keep, again, that rate rider that would be now used to subsidize DDOT's construction costs at a very affordable rate. But I just do want to make sure we're clear about that OPC is extraordinarily sensitive to the costs of this project, because we do understand, again, Washington Gas just had a rate increase this year. PEPCO, they're filed for a rate increase. The commission hasn't issued an order on it as of yet. But we do understand that right now folks are probably feeling a bit of sticker shock. So that's something we are very much so aware of, and it's something that we are working, you know, like I said, quite vigilantly to make sure that the costs for this project are as low as they can possibly be, but yet to actually still deliver, again, the resiliency benefits that the project was designed to provide.
How long would that surcharge be applied through the life of the project, for the next 10 years?
So the rate rider, that's the one that would be used to pay DDOT's construction costs. As Chairman Kane said a moment ago, that's pay as you go. So literally, it would be approved for the first 2 years as a part of the biannual plan that they just filed, excuse me, with the commission. Now, whereas the other surcharge that's going to be used to pay PEPCO's construction costs, again, that's something that would last a bit longer, because that's PEPCO's going to be using what's called debt and equity financing to basically generate the revenues for their costs, but then they're going to recover those costs through a surcharge. So that'll actually last a bit longer.
What's a bit longer?
Yeah, actually, the cost of the PEPCO expenses and the cost of the DDOT expenses are about the same. It's $500,000 with, well, probably $375 for DDOT over out of the $1 billion. DDOT's going to get it paid as you go. So if it takes 10 years, it'll be paid off in 10 years. That's where the dollar comes from. PEPCO, because it finances it a different way, PEPCO will be spreading the cost out over 30, 40, 50 years. So out of the $1.15, about a dollar will go to DDOT for like 10 years, and 10 or 15 or 20 cents or so will go to PEPCO, but it'll go on for a much longer time.
Okay.
But that was keeping the cost down and keeping a maximum at the very, you know, keeping it under a reasonable amount, particularly for residential customers, was one of the goals that everyone had in this.
I wonder if you guys take coupons for this, because it sounds like you're going to need one.
Hopefully it's going to last 30, 40, 50 years.
So. Yeah, well, yeah. Let us hope so. What is going to happen at the community hearings?
Sure. The community hearings are primarily for information. We're going to have, first of all, PEPCO and DDOT make a presentation at each of the hearings, and they're going to focus on the particular neighborhood and the particular area where the hearing is being held, because they're where the construction is going to be. And they'll give an overview, and then they'll say, okay, this is what, the one I've got up on my screen here looking at, say again, the Marshall Heights area, where it's going to run down from Alabama Avenue, starting at Pennsylvania Avenue and going all the way up Bowen Road, up there all the way up to 51st Street going. So they're going to say, okay, this is what's going to happen here. This is why we're doing it in this neighborhood. And then we will hear from people, will ask questions, people will have comments. We will tell them where they can get more information about it. And we said they've got until September 12th. We will have the record open to hear from people at the hearings. At some later date in the fall, the commission will then have an open meeting, and we will look at everything that's been filed. We'll look at all the information, and we'll make a decision and issue an order.
And at the office, you know, strongly encourages all interested individuals to participate in the upcoming community hearings. That really is your primary opportunity to have your voice heard, get your questions answered, voice your concerns regarding this project. Now, again, as the chairman said a moment ago, there also will be an opportunity for interested parties or individuals to file written comments, which would be due by September 13th. But those people would also have to, move for file a motion to intervene as well, which I think is due July 28th.
And what does that mean?
Basically, that's if you want to participate. And I guess that really goes more so towards if this process goes the hearing route. And Chairman Kane, let me know if I misspeak.
Yes.
That's when you need to actually seek intervener status, which basically makes you a party to a hearing. That is, should a hearing actually take place. But as for filing written comments, you can go ahead and file written comments regarding both the biannual plan and the financing application, but yet not necessarily participate in a hearing should one actually take place.
Right, and that usually applies to organizations.
I was about to say, what would be the purpose of being an intervener?
Any individual citizen who wants to file a comment doesn't need to file to intervene, doesn't need a lawyer. All they have to do is, and it's on our website, they just send an email, they send a letter, it's got to be in writing, to the Secretary of the Commission, and that goes into the record. Every single email, every single letter, every single handwritten note you want to put in the U.S. Postal Service and send to us, that goes into the record, it goes on into the public record, and it is given due consideration by the Commission. So
that was what I was going to ask.
Exactly.
What does due consideration mean exactly?
Yeah.
When you say due consideration, because it would appear to me that DDOT, PEPCO, the Public Service Commission already knows what they want to see happen. So I would imagine that short of anything dramatic, that you just kind of, you know, put it in a book and sit it on a shelf.
That's not the way we have acted.
Oh, dear. Help me with that.
What the law requires PEPCO and DDOT to file. We know what the goal is of the legislation. But I think if you look at the record of the commission, we do give serious consideration. For example, all the details of the consumer task force, the education task force, and a lot of that came from the hearings that we had on the first go-round of undergrounding. People made some very good suggestions about how that should be conducted, what should be in it, and it all went into the order that the commission issued. So we do listen, okay. And we do want to hear from people.
And if I may just add, and as the chair can attest to this, our office, we work very hard to comprehensively address not just these particular applications, but really, quite frankly, any matter that we're a party to before the commission. But this matter in particular, both our internal resources as well as our external consultants are currently looking very thoroughly at both the biannual plan as well as the financing application to make sure that it comports with the revised statute, and also, again, to look at to see if they made the proper feeder selections and the costs where they need to be and whatnot. We look at it very thoroughly and, again, in a comprehensive fashion, and in so doing, again, file a lot of materials with the commission that they can go ahead and use and consider, their overall applications and ultimately reach a decision.
Right. I also add, once we make a decision, that's not the end of it. We've got built into there, and we'll have both in the law and in our order, regular reporting, regular oversight, annual true-up, how the money's being used, what is it on schedule, what's being done. There will be a tremendous amount of ongoing oversight for this first 2 years' projects and for all the subsequent projects.
Well, I think that's a good place to end this conversation. I, as promised, all of this information, where the hearings will be held, as well as the links to the Office of the People's Counsel and the Public Service Commission, will be on our website, whur.com. There will also be a list of all four hearings. The first one is on Friday at the Community of Hope at 2:30 in the afternoon. There are hearings in the evening for those who cannot make the late morning or early afternoon.